Jesus appears and pronounces, "I am the true vine." And maybe now we are prepared to hear something of the way they would have heard.
You'll want to be sure to catch the rest of Pastor Terry's message in just a moment. But first, we want to thank you for tuning in to the Indian Run Christian Church broadcast with pastor and author Terry Bailey. This broadcast is also produced as a free podcast that you can find on iTunes or become a subscriber through our website. We'll have more information at the end of the broadcast, but for right now, let's join Pastor Terry as he preaches this week's insightful message.
And again, good morning. Russell, if you check, you will probably see that you stole the first page of my sermon. I could probably use it. I don't think I'd get by without it, but I'd soon have it back. On one of the many canoe trips that I've taken down the White River, Andrew and Caleb will both remember this one. They will remember that we were camping in the shadow of the 39 bypass off Martinsville, just as close to civilization as we have ever camped. But it was one of the trips where we had not taken as much food. Sometimes we take more, sometimes we take less. Sometimes we determine that we're mostly going to eat what we can find and catch. And one thing I remember about that trip is that it was blazing, blazing hot and not a cloud in the sky. And we spent a lot of time hunkered in the shade or playing in the water because it was just so hot. And after a day or two of eating fresh caught fish seasoned only with smoke and sand, a person begins to get a hankering for something else, and we found near our campsite a wild grapevine strung out in a maple tree, and it had just a few clusters of fruit scattered about the vine, and they were at that perfect ripeness for wild grapes, which last about 5 minutes before they turn into little hard dry pits. And so we picked, wow, am I saying too close to this microphone or what? We picked the clusters of wild grapes that we could get, and they were small compared to Concord grapes, and they were dry compared to Concord grapes, and they were few compared to Concord grapes, but we ate them like candy at the moment until there were no more that we could reach short of cutting down the tree that the thing was growing in. And this morning I'd like to ask, why do you think that the wild grapes were so much smaller and drier and fewer and widely scattered than the grapes on the arbor sometimes in your backyard? Because they're very similar as to the type of grape. And there's more than one answer, but here's one answer. That vine was a mile long. I mean, it was spread out all over that tree and doubled back and ran around and twisted and had branches that ran everywhere and great big wild grape leaves that spread out to kingdom come. And it put all its energy into supporting all that bulk of growth. And so there were only just a few wild grapes. Small, puny, semi-dry, a little darker flavor. And only a few of them. Now keep that in the back of your head for a little bit. As we see that Jesus came to members of the nation of Israel in this passage that Jeff read for us, and he says to them, "I am the true vine." Now you need to be prepared a little bit to be able to hear this the way that they would have heard it, because they had some definite thoughts about the vine. And essentially, they thought, we are the vine. Of course, we are the vine. There were reasons for their thinking that. If you were to go to the prophecy of Hosea and you were to look into the 10th chapter, you would see that Israel is called God's luxuriant vine. So there's reasons. If you were to go to the second chapter of the prophecy of Jeremiah, and you were to read there, you would see that it says that God planted Israel as a choice vine from true seed. So, there are reasons. If you were to go to the book of Psalms, and you were to read the 80th Psalm, you would get this: God brought Israel as a vine out of Egypt to be planted, to root deep, to spread out and fill the promised land. So there are, if you were to read the 5th chapter of the book of Isaiah, you would discover that almost the entire chapter is dedicated to what is called the parable of the vineyard, the vine yard. And it talks about how God dug all the rocks out of the soil on a fertile hillside, and how he built a protective hedge around that hill, and how he erected a tower and put up a vat to be prepared for all the fruit that was to come. And then he planted Israel there as his vineyard to bring forth that fruit. Or if you were to read Ezekiel 19, you would see that Israel was the vine in the Lord's vineyard, planted by abundant waters, with branches strong enough to be fashioned into scepters for kings and growth that would reach above the clouds. Oh, it's quite the description. And there are other passages. But you should understand there were reasons for Israel's thoughts about the vine. Essentially, we are the vine. God said so. And what kind of vine are we? We are from true seed. We grow luxuriantly. We root deep. We have strong branches. And we are hedged about with protection. And there is the tower and the wine press of the Lord just waiting for all the fruit that we are bound to produce. That's what kind of vine we are. Now, they missed something. If you were to go back and read each one of those passages that I cited, you would find exactly the words that I used. But if you kept reading, you would find more. In Hosea 10, where it says Israel is God's luxuriant vine, it also says, speaking for God, and the better I made things for that vine, the more worthless it became. And if you were to go back to Jeremiah, and you would read those words that are there about how God planted Israel as a choice vine from true seed, you would see that Jeremiah then says, speaking for God, but you have turned in to the degenerate shoots of a foreign vine chasing after the Baals. And if you were to go back to Psalm 80, yes, you would certainly find that God brought Israel up out of Egypt as a choice vine. You would find that. And then you would find God saying that he is going to break down the protective hedge and let the wild pigs understand what that would have meant to the Israelites. The wild pigs come in and devour the entire vineyard because it has been such a failure. If you were to read all of Isaiah 5, you would find what I said about God digging out rocks and the fertile hill and the hedge and the tower and the vat. You would find all that. And then you would find God saying, I went to all this trouble, and what did I get from my vineyard? Wild grapes, just the same as if I had left it to grow wild in the woods. So judge between me and my vineyard. What should I do about this? And then if you were to read all of Ezekiel 19, you would find that business planted by abundant waters, strong branches, strong enough to make scepters, growth reaching to the heavens. You would find all that. Then you would find this: I will pluck you up and cast you down in my fury. The strong branch will wither, and the vineyard will be consumed from the branch tips to the roots by the fire of my judgment. See, there were portions of all those passages, and every passage you read about Israel as divine in the Old Testament makes this same point. Every last one, Israel failed to produce the fruit that God looked for in His vineyard. They liked the good part of those passages. They seem to have missed entirely the judgmental failure part of the passages. You know, in the years leading up to the ministry of Jesus, after Malachi, but before Matthew, during the Maccabean revolt, the Jews stamped their own coins for a brief time, and on the obverse of each coin was a picture of the vine representing the nation of Israel growing as God's vineyard to bring fruit into His kingdom. But they failed. On the temple that stood when Jesus walked the earth in flesh, not Solomon's temple, which was destroyed before, but the second temple, which was there when Jesus came, one of the most famous things was a huge golden grapevine on the face of the temple. It stood for the nation of Israel and all the fruit that they would bear in God's kingdom. It was a growing sculpture. It grew over the years. It was considered to be an honor to contribute enough gold to make one more little golden grape to go on that thing, or from a whole community or a very wealthy man to contribute enough gold to make a whole cluster of grapes, or extend the vine a little further and put some new growth on there. Anybody had the goal, the ambition of contributing gold to make that thing grow a little bit bigger, but all the grapes were gold. There were no real ones. Israel was not producing the fruit that God desired. They were just building a golden monument to the fruit they were supposed to produce, but weren't. And God shed not a single tear when all that gold was hacked up and carted away, because it stood for nothing real. Into the midst of this epic failure, Jesus appears and pronounces, "I am the true vine." And maybe now we are prepared to hear something of the way they would have heard it. We hear the vine. God said so. Yes, but you failed. And I am the true vine. Take it as a demotion if you wish, but you're just branches now. And you cannot bear any fruit unless you are attached to me. Unless you draw your strength from me, unless you find the truth in me, unless you put your life in my hands, you will never bear fruit. Because now I am the true vine. This is one of the great themes of the entire Bible. The old failed, but Jesus succeeds. Adam failed. Yes, our first father Adam failed. Jesus is the second Adam who succeeds where the first failed and fulfills the terms of the covenant that Adam was unable to live up to. The sons of Abraham failed. They failed signally. But Jesus is the fulfillment of the promises made to Abraham. Jesus is the final word in the covenant God established with Abraham. Israel failed under the covenant of Moses to keep keep the law. They failed entirely. But Jesus kept it. He is the fulfillment of that failed covenant. And He rises to the rewards that Israel could not attain. Y'all had your chance! You could have been God's kingdom in the midst of this fallen world. You should have been God's kingdom in the midst of this fallen world. You might have been the vine. But now Jesus is, and actually always was, because God is never surprised or caught off guard by our failures. Jesus is the true vine. It is not just a judgment on Israel's past. It is a warning for our future as branches. Israel's failure was in the bearing fruit department. They bore no fruit, or at least not the fruit that God desired. We need to bear fruit. And Jesus lays out the two conditions for us to be fruitful, and they are simple. Number one, we must be connected to the vine. We have to have a firm, inseparable connection to Jesus Christ, or we cannot bear fruit. Two, we need to be willing to bear pruning. Now, I am not much of an arborist. I have never raised many grapes. I've helped a little bit on my grandparents' farm with a couple of other people. I've eaten a lot of grapes, if that counts for anything. But I'm not much of an arborist. So I read a couple of articles this week on the proper procedures for pruning grapevines to get maximum fruit. And I'll essentially reduce in general terms to two questions. When and how do you prune? So based on my reading, here's the when. When do you prune grapevines? In the spring. And the summer. And the fall. And the winter. When you plant them. Before you harvest. After you harvest. And in the deadest of dormant seasons, that's when you prune grapevines. In other words, today, tomorrow, next week, always you prune. And how? How do you prune grapevines? Here is the best I can do to reduce all the advice I read in these articles to a single sentence. Don't be timid. Get in there and cut. If you're worried that you're about to cut off too much, cut off a little more, because you weren't about to cut off too much. Go for it! When you plant a new vine, you're supposed to prune it back to just one little skinny shoot with no more than three buds, not four buds, one little skinny shoot, maybe the size of my pinky, with three buds on it and no more, and that's what you put in the ground, and in 1 year's growth, it should reach up to be able to grab hold of a wire, the first wire in the trellis that you set 30 inches above the ground. And if it doesn't quite make it, say it only vines up there 27 inches, 28 inches, won't quite make the trellis, you know what you do? You reduce it to one little skinny vine with three buds on it and make it try again. And when it makes it to the 30-inch wire and begins to grow toward the 60-inch wire, you repeat that procedure for between 30 and 60. And when it makes it to the 30-inch wire, everything below the 30-inch wire, besides the one shoot itself, you cut off. And when it makes it to the 30-inch wire that first time, everything above the 30-inch wire, you cut off. And you leave two branches, one to go each way on the 30-inch wire. You do this all again until you get to the 60-inch wire. This is how you do it. And then, when you've got the thing up and growing and you're ready to let it produce fruits, here is a fact that I was totally unaware of. Apparently it takes 15 leaves to ripen a cluster of grapes. I bet you didn't know that. I didn't know that. 15 leaves to ripen a cluster of grapes. So you look at your branches and you say, this one is going to have a cluster of grapes on it. I can see the bloom going to be a cluster of grapes here. This one is not. And this one is shading this one. And this one is soaking up sunlight that this one needs. I'm going to do to this branch. Whack! I'm going to cut it off. I'm going to cut off every shoot that doesn't have a bloom on it because I'm only interested in the grapes. And if I leave the one that has the bloom on it and has 15 leaves, but maybe it has 17 leaves, maybe it has 23 leaves, you know what you do with all the leaves beyond 15? You whack those puppies off there. Because you don't want the plant to invest in extra leaves. You just want the 15 leaves that will produce the grapes. And in the final week before harvest, when the grapes are just almost ready, if any of those 15 leaves happen to be keeping the full sun off that cluster of grapes, you know what you do to those guys? You cut them off. And you throw them away so that the fruit will receive full sunlight in its final stage. And when you've picked the fruit, guess what you do? You cut back to the last bud. And if before the dead of winter that thing managed to get an inch or two of growth out past where you trimmed it, you know what you do there in January to that little bit of growth that managed to get out? You cut that off again. Why? Because fruit is the object. We need to see what is the fruit that God desires from our lives. And we need to be willing to see some of the non-essentials cut away. Because the world is full of non-essentials. Vain ambitions, counterproductive loves, useless endeavors. The world is full of them and they will soak up our energy. Energy that should have gone to the production of the fruit that God desires, but now won't. And the non-essentials are not the same for everybody. That depends on a few things, but let me not go into that and just say that we need to be willing for God to whack off the non-essentials and throw them away so that our lives will produce the fruit He desires. And having said all that, what is the fruit that God desires? Now, I went back and done scriptural background on other things so far, and I'm not going to take the time to do this, but I have done it. And if anybody is wanting to discuss the scriptural background of these four fruits that I identify, I'm willing to have that discussion, or you can just do your own study. It's not hard to find this stuff. I tell you, there are four fruits, as far as I can discern, that God is after, and here they are. God wants from your life the peaceable fruit of righteousness. He wants it from your life, Jamie. He wants it from your life, Mary. God desires from your life the spiritual fruit of love. And He wants it from Julie. And He wants it from Chris. God desires from our lives the beautiful fruit of glory that shines from our deeds upward so that people see the wondrous beauty of the God that we serve. And He wants that from Carl. And He wants it from Kathy. And God desires one last fruit. He desires the evangelistic fruit of souls added to His kingdom. More brought in to know His grace through Jesus Christ. And He wants that fruit from Phil. And He wants it from Charlie. And he wants it from me. Righteousness, love, glory, and souls added to the kingdom. There are, of course, from one point of view, things that people can do for themselves, of themselves, from one point of view. Jesus said, unless you're attached to me, you cannot bear fruit. And people will object that non-believers have done many worthwhile things. And that is so. In general terms, I will say that believers or non-believers alike, all that we have comes from God. And nothing that we do is possible without Him. But set that aside for a minute and just acknowledge that non-believers can do many things. And perhaps among us, nominal, non-committed believers can do many things. You can build a great and glorious cathedral. Not everybody who worked on that big cathedral in France was a committed believer. Some of them were conscripted labor back in the day. I suppose an absolute atheist could be an architect and could have helped design that thing. How many of you watched last year when it burned? And it's gone. Non-believers can and do run worthwhile, charitable endeavors. I have contributed to some in my life. I have helped with secular endeavors, not as a secular person myself, but seeing a good work and willing to throw some weight behind it. Secular people, non-believers, can and do run worthwhile charitable enterprises. This is so. But the aid that they give disperses and goes away. And the people to whom they gave it pass and go away. And I'm not discrediting their work. I'm only saying that it's for here, for now, for a short time. Of course we should feed the hungry. Of course. But only these things abide forever. Righteousness and love and glory and souls added to the kingdom will be just as valuable when the present stars are dim memories. And as to those other works, if while we fed people, if while we clothed people, if while we built glorious buildings, we did it in righteousness and with a heart filled with love and for the glory of God, and as a tool, a way of introducing people to Him, suddenly new worth has been added to those endeavors. And so I find myself agreeing with Jesus. We cannot really bear fruit unless we are attached to Him. And we will not bear adequate fruit unless we are willing to endure pruning. And to have some of the non-essentials slashed from our lives. If these two conditions do not describe you, firmly attached to Jesus Christ, willing to be pruned, if those two conditions do not describe you, then this moment of invitation is for you.
We want to take a moment to thank all of you, our listeners, for setting aside time each week for the Indian Run Christian Church broadcast on this station. You can find out more about the church by visiting our website at www.christforeastcanton.com. That's www.christforeastcanton.com. On behalf of Pastor Terry and all the folks at Indian Run Christian Church, I pray God's blessing on you and your family.